again say your name?
My name is Joseph Rodrigues. My surname is Rodrigues. First name is Joseph, and I usually prefer to be called Joe. And date of birth is 11th of January 1961.
Okay, so where did you live in the Leytonstone area between 84 to 94?
I moved into the Leytonstone area in July 1985. And the first place I lived was 103 Dyers Hall Road. And that was up until 1989, when that house was demolished for the M11 Link Road. And I moved to a property which was about seven doors up the road, which was in Dyers Hall Road again, and it was number 55.
So, when you got your first house, was that an Acme house?
Yes, I applied for an Acme house in the beginning of the summer of 1985. That meant writing to Acme giving my reasons why I wanted to be considered for a property. And I was told that there were properties which were available on a shared basis, which was one bedroom and one living room to be used as a studio. So I just needed to team up with somebody because they said they could offer a property provided people came to them in twos or threes. So I met somebody at college who was interested in staying in the area, and we sort of put together a joint application and were successful in securing 103 Dyers Hall Road as a living and working space. That was directly from Acme. And that was the case up until 1989, when we had to give the house back to Acme. And we were further offered a property which was run by Acme. It just happened that some people were moving out of the area, so they had a spare property. And again, that was a shared property which I shared with two other artists. And the working space was less at that time, because of three people rather than two people. Otherwise, the setup was very much the same.
And could you remember the other artists you shared with?
Yes, I shared initially in 1985 with Mark Sowden and also Sheila Whittaker, who moved in as well, because it was a larger house. And then in 1989, I shared with Mark again, and another artist, Robert Lewinstein. And that was a setup until roughly 1992.
And like, say for example, the first house you moved in, what kind of condition was it in, and what did you do to it to make it good?
When we found out about the properties that were initially being offered by Acme, we were told that they needed some renovating, and that varied from because they had been derelict in some instances. Usually they were just, the windows were just shut up with boarding, and Acme had keys for front doors. In the house in 103, I remember very clearly that it was accessible, but as soon as you went in through the front door, there was evidence of some destruction, in as much as floorboards were removed, windows were broken, and in fact you could actually see straight down from upstairs through to the kitchen, which meant that there wasn't a ceiling in the kitchen. And outside the back there was just rubbish, a lot of stuff which had to be got rid of. Also, bathrooms needed to be fitted out, and Acme, as part of leasing property, had to make sure that they were habitable, so they gave start-up sort of grants to cover the electric supply, making sure that it was fully installed, and hot water, some form of hot water supply. So that was all part of the renovations. And there was up to £1,000, which was meant to cover the electrics. That meant a proper qualified electrician coming in, giving his quote, and also somebody dealing with the gas and making sure the gas supply for the boiler was working. And that usually came to about £700, and then the rest was spent for decoration, which the occupants could take care of.
So, I mean, you've mentioned that, you know, that you can see right from the kitchen up to the next floor. So what did you do to the house to put it right, and how far did you work on the house? Where did you decide to keep it?
Well, as we were hoping to move in that year, literally in the space of a few weeks after securing getting the tenancy, because we were obviously paying rent and we had nowhere else to stay, so we had to literally stay in sleeping bags, in as much as the work we decided we could do by salvaging floorboards. There was actually a timber, second-hand timber yard close by, I think, if I remember correctly, where we could order floorboards to be delivered from them and put them in ourselves, because we had those kind of skills for doing for basic carpentry work. And we glazed the windows, bought glass from literally around the corner from a builder's merchants and put those in. As long as it wasn't serious gas or electrical work, we could do a fair bit. In fact, I remember finding a wash basin, a nice yellow wash basin, which was really very luxurious, really. It was quite a large wash basin, which seemed to fit ideally in the bathroom. And we were told that if we could get it there before, while the guy was doing the plumbing with hot water, he would plumb it in for us, which he did. So we were able to enjoy a very nice bathroom on that basis.
How long did it take you to do all the renovations?
Oh, I think it took a good part of the summer, because if we moved in July, I think we had a bonfire night November the 5th that year, 1985, where all the rubbish, which was either prior to our moving in or as part of our renovation, was used as a bonfire. And the bonfire was absolutely huge, because next door to the house was this an empty plot, which was basically like a garden at the side of the house, which was tarmacked. It was like a garage site. And we were able to make a huge bonfire and then have a big party. I think it was a moving in party, and that was November the 5th, so it must have taken us about 2 months.
Yeah.
2 months of work.
That's quite quick, really.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it was a case that we needed to establish certain basic. We had to put locks on the doors. We had to glaze the windows. Put flooring down in a couple of the rooms, and we just sort of blitzed it. Really, we got help from people who also were in the area. We got to know about three or four people close by. There was Simon Gough and another couple of artists as well, who lived on houses just literally next door to us, and they helped us with some of the work, and we helped them as they were moving in. I think ours was particularly bad because it was the end terrace, so people had managed to get in from the wasteland, which was by the bridge, and then they came over to the house and gotten broken through the back, and that's how it probably had fallen into disrepair.
So when you you applied to Acme, can you remember being interviewed?
Yes, it was a case of letters, sending letters first of all to find out what the procedure was. And I remember going to see Acme, I think it was Roger or Sarah Greengrass, I'm not sure. And it was a very straightforward interview, in as much as we had to show some evidence of work and be prepared to take on something like some repair work in a house or whatever. And I think they were looking for people who could manage the short life property as they saw it, and would be able to return the property Once the scheme, once it was decided, it was no longer possible to stay in the property for whatever the reason. So there was an undertaking, and I think I was the main signature on the house initially, because Mark came down from Manchester doing an MA, and I told him that I got the house, so he was very pleased. And then afterwards, I think it was a case that it was a joint tenancy. They'd got to know the occupants of the house on equal terms.
So, when you had your interview, you presented slides of your work and everything, and then you had to view the house.
Yes, there was a viewing of the house, which I think it was Roger was the main person who was going out and showing people the various properties. There was quite a few dotted around in the area, so he knew the properties. He could describe the area quite well at the interview. We were also, I went to college in the area, in East Ham, and then in Forest Gate or West Ham, around the back there. And so that was only about 3.5 miles away from Leytonstone, so it wasn't a great change in a sense for me. So yeah, I was quite happy. I should say that Acme was not the only place I applied for some sort of housing stroke studio possibility. I did apply to a housing co-op, because at that time there was a lot of properties that were being managed on a sort of short life basis by other housing co-ops, and Acme was just, in one respect, just another housing association, albeit designed specifically for artists. And that was very fruitful, in as much as those properties there to be secured if possible, on a short life property basis. And I think I was lucky, actually, because the summer I applied to Acme, I applied to another housing co-op and came up trumps with that one as well. So I had two properties to my name.
With those properties, but did you have like more space in the Acme one?
There was the Acme one was more favourable for sculptors, and I saw myself as a sculptor definitely. And Mark as well had done an MA in Manchester as a sculptor, so we were looking for kind of ground floor accessible space to make sculpture. And the property, the place through the other housing co-op was in a terraced house, which was suitable more for a painter. And in fact, a painter friend decided that he was interested and got involved with the housing co-op, and subsequently took that property on, and that was in Plaistow.
So you were offered a whole house from that other housing?
Yes, it was a very similar setup, because the houses were licensed lock, stock and barrel from the local council with some sort of tenancy of a couple of years, and suitable for two or three people to share. And what they wanted all people, prospective members, to join the housing association. In Acme's case, it was just literally they were wanting to transfer the tenancy to participants. In the other situation, it was a case of tenancy to being taken up by individuals, and they would be part of a housing co-op, so they could share expertise or advice or whatever amongst fellow members. And that was a slightly different setup as regards. Whereas with Acme, it was once Acme had given the property to artists, then it was just a matter of license agreements, payments being made on a monthly basis. And if there was any serious problems, then Acme would then be able to intervene or whatever, for whatever the reason. Otherwise, we never really kept much contact with Acme. There was no like regular meetings or whatever.
Whereas perhaps the other
housing. The other housing co-ops had regular meetings. Yeah.
So, you started to talk a little bit about the renovations. Can you kind of go on and describe what you did, you said that you put the floors down and the windows in. What about the kind of paperwork? Did you kind of paint it all white or...?
Well, it was a case of making sure that it was weatherproof, because the winter was coming up, I remember. One of the problems was mold was growing inside the walls, on the walls inside the rooms, and that had to be dealt with because it had been boarded up. I think moisture had got in and couldn't get out. There was no ventilation, and also maybe the roof was leaking and water permeated through, and any fabrics, any rubbish in there would have just got very damp, and mold would have started being produced. And so we had to make sure it was habitable. And obviously we were looking to paint it and make it into artist studios as such, but I think it was a fair bit of work to make it, to get rid of the mildew on the walls and the smell that's associated with it. And then when it came to painting, it was just painted with emulsions, and woodwork was painted white, and it was up to the individual as to how they wanted to paint, whether it was a bedroom or a studio. So it wasn't necessarily all white. I think my room was three different shades, and I remember painting the ceiling as well, which was quite interesting, quite a nice thing to do. Yeah, it was also putting locks on the doors that had to be done, because we didn't know whether the keys were... I think we put a new door on, actually. I seem to remember a new door was fitted or hung, I think. A lot of the stuff was either for some reason taken off. That's why Acme or the council would have boarded houses up, and that was quite a serious concern to them, because they didn't want it squatted, in as much as there was a fire hazard and there was a possibility of criminal damage to other adjacent properties. Bear in mind as well that there was some properties next door close by to us on the same road, which was owned by people. So that the security of house owners to be borne in mind. So any houses which were boarded up was a bit of a liability, because people could access them, and hence access other households who weren't associated with Acme. They were council tenants or private owners or whatever. And they put these steel doors in some instances on the front doors, took the front doors, existing front doors off. So the front doors were probably found in some room inside the house. And then they put these big steel doors on with padlock, with special locks on. And you knew then that was a boarded up house. I think the policy was quite simple. They just wanted the area, houses to be habitated rather than boarded up for a lengthy period of time, which what it looked like. So,
Think your house had been empty for a while?
I have no idea, to be honest. It could have been a year, it could have been 3 months, it could have been 4 years. I have no idea. I never actually asked Acme. I would say it was up to a year for sure. For the amount of work that it needed, and also I think probably, I'm not quite sure, but for them to replace wash basins and toilet cisterns and toilet pans and baths or whatever, I think, because this was definitely the case in some of the houses, then it meant that they had been smashed up, and that was definitely a policy, certainly towards the end of the in the early 90s, when houses were being given back to stop people squatting them, things were just broken up inside, so they were uninhabitable. And that was done as a policy to make it sure that people wouldn't take up residence.
And when Acme offered you the house, did they give you a time span?
They said it was 2 years. They said they could be fairly sure that nothing would it would be short life housing for 2 years. It turned out to be a bit more than that, but it was a case that after 2 years they would give us an idea of what the climate was as regards the houses being asked to be returned. And if they didn't receive any instruction that the houses were wanting to be returned to the Department of Transport, because the Department of Transport owned the properties, and they had secured them from, I would imagine, individual tenants or house owners by compulsory purchase order in the 70s, 80s, I don't know. And then, excuse me, there was like housing stock, which Acme then took on board for maybe a couple of years. And then they were, they were informed as to whether they were required or not. So we'd have a, like an extension for maybe another year. And then obviously after 3 or 4 years had gone by, the time that they were extended was even shorter. Mm-hmm. They would say 6 months and then maybe 3 months. So it was always it was quite difficult. I think the favourable time was 85 till, right through till 89. Then by 89, Dyersall, 103 Dyersall Road was required. And we were had another lease of existence on the road as Artist House in 55 Dyersall Road, and then that was probably till 92, and then after 92 it was literally a matter of every 3 months there would be letters from Acme giving us an update and what was happening with the road and everything.
So when did you move in again?
I moved in 1985, and there was a guy living across the road from me who'd been there a lot longer, and he was actually a tutor at a college close by, and he had an Acme house, so he knew Acme quite well, so, and for a longer period of time. So his house is number 22 Dyersall Road.
Can you remember who that was?
It's Chris Dawson, the sculptor. He was a tutor. I mean, he was he was a practicing artist, and he'd been in the area for quite a number of years. I think maybe from 1980. Mm. I have no idea, but I did meet Chris when we moved in, and he was there until 91, something like that. And then he moved out of the area because his house was one of the houses that were finally demolished for preparatory works on the road, the M11 Link Road. They sort of, rather than knock the whole road down, they picked up on individual houses for various reasons, either as they were trying to work out the logistics of planning for the road, and they needed key spots to view the road and make, so certain houses disappeared in advance of the main work, I think.
Mm.
That was the case also. The first house that was called back was in Wanstead, and that was the first house that was definitely called back. And I remember everybody sort of using that as a kind of an alarm bell as regards properties being required. And that, I think, was 1989. So maybe that was the first house that was demolished.
Was that Acme?
Well, ours was actually one of the first, so that would have been late 88, because ours was definitely gone by 103. That was an Acme house, yes. That was in Cambridge Park Road.
So Acme had places in
Wanstead? Yes, they had places in Wanstead, because the M11 Link Road was going all the way through Wanstead, I think, through next door, close by to the Cambridge Park Road was part of what then became the lead road into the M11 Link Road at the Green Man Roundabout. So close to the Green Man Roundabout, there was a lot of development, which was, they actually built the road. And there was this for a number of months in 91, 92, I think, there was this flyover, which was going half over the Green Man Roundabout, which was meant to be linking up with going through Leighton or whatever, and then eventually the Blackwall Tunnel approach. And for various reasons, they had to kind of estimate the impact on the area. So building works was a slow process for the Link Road.
So I want to go back to the decor of your house. So can you describe the layout, like where you had your studios in the house?
Yes, in 103 Dyersall Road, it was the end terraced. So as I said, we had the possibility of some outside space, which was all part of the same property. So that made it possible to make a lean-to, which was literally a timber structure with corrugated plastic on the side of the house. just head height, not too tall. And inside the house, as you came in, you had the front door, and then you had the stairs on the right hand side going upstairs, which went upstairs to two rooms, and a bathroom and toilet. That's one of the reasons why there was work which went on. I just remember that the bathroom, why the bathroom had to be fitted out, was because the properties all had outside toilets. All the properties on Dyce Hall Road had outside toilets. I know this because 55 Dyce Hall Road, when we moved into it, had its outside toilet intact. So when we moved to that, we had a bathroom upstairs, but no toilet. So we had, so upstairs was two bedrooms, and then downstairs, the living rooms, was two single rooms and a kitchen. And that became studio space. People could use the upstairs as a studio if they wanted to, depends on light and the kind of work they did and the space they needed. It just suited us to have the studios for us downstairs, because it meant that we didn't have to carry things up the stairs, heavy stuff, tools or whatever. It was all very, very simply. It wasn't carpeted, it was very plain. Once we put floorboards down, and this is in the upstairs because they were not there, downstairs the floorboards were fairly intact, or maybe one or two had to be replaced. The kitchen, you could see from the bathroom down into the kitchen, so that had to be made good. And the kitchen had a back door which was completely off its hinges, and loads of rubbish inside the door, so that you could never. I think that was a way of keeping people out, really, by putting lots of stuff inside on the kitchen floor. So all that got dragged out into the garden, and then finally either burnt or taken away in a skip. The walls, basically the house was sound. It was a 1950s house, what we think is a 50s house. And it had at the back of the house, you had the garden, which was obviously accessible from the kitchen door. And then at the back of the garden, not about, say, about 40 feet away, was the railway line, because the railway line runs parallel to Dyce Hall Road and ran at the back of the houses. So, we were always told that it was more important to make the house habitable, not to go to town with the decorations, because there wouldn't be much chance to enjoy it. It wasn't that kind of a property. Acme's did clearly say that it was all about using it as a studio as well as living. And some people actually made their living space very, very much a different space altogether. And you did notice it in other people's houses, but in ours it was fairly simple. It was painted, some rugs, and then the studio was a different entity altogether. So.
And then you took, Sheila said you took the staircase, opened up the staircase.
Yes, just so that we can get large paintings up and down the stairs, because even though painters didn't have to carry heavy items, manoeuvring the paintings through a house is not as easy. 6 foot paintings, or any type of painting really, 5 foot, because you'd have to be careful when you're walking down the stairs, and people were quite careful with their work, not to either. They had to make sure they could take it out into the light and on a good day to have a look at it, to see what the colours were like. So people had to be able to move their paintings around quite easily. And certainly for exhibitions, work had to be packaged and then taken to wherever the show was, and people would wrap up their paintings and then find that they'd added another few inches to the width of the painting and couldn't get it down the stairs. So to help us move things like that, we took the banisters down, which created a bit of a problem, in as much as you just had to remember there was no banister when going up and down the stairs. It was a bit like an open plan staircase, but provided we could be able to con- to not suffer, we were quite happy with it. It wasn't a problem really. So we did work on the staircase. In fact, somebody wanted the banisters. I remember somebody across the road was doing the opposite. They wanted to reinstate their banisters. So we gave them all our banisters, which happened to be the right sort of size and style. Yeah, that was one of the houses. We had a settee which we couldn't get in, 55 Dyersall, when we moved from 103 to 55 Dyersall Road. We couldn't get our settee, which was a very old, ancient settee. We couldn't get it through the front door. So we had to take it through the window. So it had to go in through a neighbour's house and over the fence and in through the window to get the settee in. Which is.
And also you talked about clearing your garden. Did you use your garden as a workspace or anything?
Yes, it was a very simply laid out garden, some flower beds, a bit of a lawn area. It was quite spacious and it was accessible through the side of the house, so there was a good opportunity to use it as a kind of storage for sculpture and a place to enjoy the outside, to get an idea of the locality and as much as you could see the railway line and everything. And there was a kind of open space which was a separate plot from the house, which was fenced off by galvanized sheeting, and that was also accessible in as much as some of the sheeting had come down so you could get into the space. So it was this wild sort of garden, wildlife garden space, which was overgrown, and that's near the bridge. That was quite extensive space, but our garden primarily was used for putting sculptures out. In fact, I think right through late 80s into certainly 89 when we moved out, we had lots of sculptures dotted around. A couple of gates onto the road which as part of the lean-to and to access the side of the house, my brother was a carpenter, so he helped me by making a pair of gates to access the road. So there was a pair of proper garage gates. So that was very useful for moving blocks of stone or heavy materials or whatever. And that was the case right up until 1989.
And when you left that house, did you leave any of the sculptures there?
No, we had to vacate everything. I moved to 55 Dyersall Road, and there wasn't enough space for any of the things there. There was a very small garden. So what I did was I decided that I'd look around for another studio. So in 1989 I gave up the studio in 103 Dyersall Road and the house. It was wanted for preliminary works for the M11 Link Road, and it was just one of the couple of houses that were demolished. So after it was demolished, you could still access the road and the area in front of the house. And fortunately, there were some railway arches close by and they were available for rent. So I moved in with a couple of people into a railway arch, and that became my studio. And then I lived in 55 Dyersall Road. It was a much smaller house, not enough space for three studios, so I had my studio elsewhere, and Mark and Rob had their studios upstairs.
Rob who?
Rob Lewinstein, who moved in with Mark and myself in 55 Dyersall Road.
And were you all sculptors?
No, it was two sculptors and one painter. Rob is a painter.
So what was the area like at the time? Because you've got the experience of seeing it over quite a long period of time and the changes.
Right, when in 1985 we got the house, there were quite a number of people moving into the area, so it was an area of growth for artists moving in. I should say also that not only visual artists had places for Macne, also musicians, filmmakers, performance artists, I think, also were eligible for applying to ACME. So there was quite a group of rich diversity of artists in the on that road and in the area. So some of the people must have moved in before I did, before we did, in 85. So it could have been from 1980, it could have been from late 70s, I don't know. It's a matter of whether ACME can give that information. Certainly from 85 to 87 there was no problem. People moved in, people started networks, had exhibitions in the area, or had group shows or whatever, open studios. 89 onwards, because of certain houses going, it sort of shrunk the community, in as much as certain people had moved out, and that changed the tone of the enterprise as such for the artist. And then from 1990 it was just a constant threat to studio and living space. By that time people had actually either married or had families or whatever, and they were having to think of dependents who were living in the house. So people had very full-time kind of commitments. They were working either part-time or bringing up families, or as well as making their art. So it was a very busy atmosphere, even when it was obviously apparent that houses were being asked back. So it was a very active environment. There was several things going on. There was House Watch. There was Leighton Artist Group, which had been running, I think, from 1986 they'd formed, and there was North East London Independent Arts, and that was another group of people. And then there was Artiste, which was a artist collective, and I was a member of that, and that was from 1987, I'd say. That was only for about 9 months, maybe a year. And then people were affiliated to Waltham Forest Arts Council, and then that sort of generated more activity, because Waltham Forest Arts Council had Lloyd Park, the William Morris Gallery. ACME themselves had a gallery in Bethnal Green, so people were constantly meeting and dealing with the artistic issues. So yeah, it was quite a thriving kind of community.
So Waltham Forest Arts, were they connected to Changing Room Gallery in Lloyd Park?
They were. Changing Room Gallery came about as much later, in as much as the Changing Room Gallery was formerly changing rooms in the middle of the park. So they wanted to change the use of them from changing rooms, where they were no longer needed as such, and they wanted to provide for artist studios. I think there was a few feasibility studies looking at the possibility of artist studios set up by Waltham Forest Arts Council in some kind of capacity, either through getting some serious funding or even some sort of sponsorship or whatever. And that wasn't possible. They didn't have housing stock like ACME did. But what they did have was these kind of spaces like Waltham Forest, Lloyd's Park, and the Changing Room Gallery. So after several years, I think it must have been in the late 80s, they managed to get funding to transform the Changing Room into the Changing Room Gallery, which was a gallery space with about 6 artist studios built as a proper unit. So that was purpose made. It wasn't an adaptation, it was actually built. Because I remember seeing the site as a building site. And that was very successful, because it opened up another showing space in Waltham Forest. It also was another focal point for artists to discuss. Discuss work. And I think that was through submission of works by either the resident artists, or they actually leased it to artists who could apply for exhibitions.
So, going back to our artist? Was that the first gallery in Leighton, Leightonstone?
I think it was actually, yes, in as much as the only other showing space was either the Acme Gallery in Bethnal Green, which was running for a long time in Bonner Road, and the local art college, which was also, it had a showing space there. I remember they had a showing space which obviously students used. That is North East London Polytechnic, which it was once known as. It's now University of East London. And they were based in Greengate House, which is on Greengate Street in Plaistow. And that was, I'd say, about 3 or 4 miles away. So people would have exhibitions there in terms of their showing programme. And because there were artists living in Leightonstone, there was no showing space particularly in that area. So people were curious. I think there was a William Morris Gallery, and that was definitely a showing space, and that had been around for quite some time. And that's, I don't know how much a space was there for showing. I think it was certainly a room or two. And that would have been in conjunction with what was also going on there, which was obviously the William Morris Gallery. There was a Vestry House Museum, which was in Chernall Street, off Chernall Street, and that was in Walthamstow. I've never known whether any exhibitions took place there. That's a small kind of museum, local museum, still running. I don't think, apart from hiring an independent space, I don't think there was any showing space, so that was like a little objective amongst artists in the area. And Art East was first set up as a group of artists of like mind to want to show their work, and then because we got to know the area through living there, we got to find places that might be possible to show in either shops or derelict buildings. And so we came across a derelict building in Leightonstone High Road, and because we were able to kind of approach the owner or landlord of the property, and we were a kind of cohesive bunch of people of about six artists, they felt they were able to offer us a tenancy, which was on a weekly basis, to show the, for work to be shown there. Bear in mind that this was a derelict building, and we had already had experience of derelict buildings, in as much as we had to make good houses. We also had to take on board this derelict shop, which needed to be fitted out in as a showing space, which meant the floor had to be dealt with, and the ceiling, and a lot of painting, a lot of decorating. Probably about 3 weeks of intensive work making that sound. And then we had an exhibition there in 1986, I think, must have been, I can't remember exact date, but it would have been in 86. Art East Temporary Gallery, Leightonstone, London, March 1986. So that would have meant that we would have approached January of that year, perhaps, and then a month or so. So we would have aimed to have had an exhibition in beginning of spring, and so from the beginning of spring 1986 through till August 1986, the Artist Collective Temporary Gallery on Leightonstone High Road was running, with support from artists who wished to show work, who either lived in the area or wanted to show in that area, either because they were studying close by, and were able to meet the rental, which was, I think, £80 a week. So between three people, that was fairly affordable. And there was quite a number of people. I think we had about 9 shows in the space of those months.
Did you get any local funding?
We got, by the time that the gallery was up and running, I think for the first 2 shows we put the money up to kind of hire the space and develop it and decorate it. And I think by the time it got halfway through, I think certainly the summer, we'd got at least two shows. We got some funding from Waltham Forest Arts Council because we had affiliated to them. They were able to give us a small grant, I think it was about £250, which helped towards publicity and I think maintenance, and some sort of maintenance. It was mainly publicity, so it might have been 150, it might have been up to £250, I can't remember.